Hey, our next guest has been with us many times. He's an old friend of the show. Carlos Mencia has really got it going these days. Almost 300,000 people came out to see him on his Punisher TV tour. He's making a Farrelly Brothers movie for DreamWorks with Ben Stiller. And Mind of Mencia kicks off its third season on Comedy Central. Good morning. Welcome.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
Not much. Are you busy working hard?
Well, right now I'm about to start drinking because of that song you guys were playing.
Is that a drinking song?
That's a total drinking song, bro.
See, we don't speak Spanish, so we don't know. I mean, it could
well,
for
any
us.
Any song that sounds like that is a drinking song.
Yeah.
Well, that's out of our Cinco de Mayo library, so that would make sense. We just keep a couple Irish songs for St. Patrick's Day, a couple of Hispanic songs for Cinco de Mayo.
For Carlos Mencia.
Yeah.
See, because all those songs have they have the sad, the sad things going on, it's so sad and so, my life really sucks. It's like those old country songs that, you just gotta
Spanish country.
And my dog died and my mother's gone and my father got cancer. It's that song.
So you would need to drink.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't drink a lot, do you, Carlos?
No, I don't. Typically? I've never been drunk in my life.
Are you serious?
I swear to God.
Whole life.
My whole life, I've never been drunk. But you got to understand that my family is a bunch of alcoholics, of course. So, I grew up with my brothers and my dad and, everybody drinking. And so I was just like, I don't think I want to be like these people.
Nice. Nice that you could do that from you. And do they now look at you and see how successful you are? And have any of them said, I'm just going to get drunk because I'm not
successful? I don't know what's so different about Carlos.
My brother, I inspired him to stop drinking. So he was a really big alcoholic, and he hasn't had a drink in 21 years or something like that.
Wow.
But he's still not a nice guy, so to speak.
Didn't help.
Is it safe to say that getting out of that drinking environment is what got you on just out of the house and on different stages?
Oh, hell yeah, man. I mean, think about this. I get liquor for free ever since I started doing comedy at comedy clubs. I would have been, my God, the worst ever. So, yeah, when I started getting away from that, it was just the best, man. I mean, for me anyway, and it let me focus, and, I never got drunk. I mean, don't get me wrong, I did all the chick stuff, but I didn't, I've never had to apologize for something that I did. I've never had to wake up with somebody that I could not believe that I was with. Don't misunderstand me. I've woken up with a lot of dogs in my life.
You knew it going down.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I saw them that night. I have no excuse.
When I woke up and she was fat and ugly, I was like, I knew. I wasn't drunk last night. I knew what you looked like.
Now, how about the drugs? A lot of comedians fall victim to the drugs. Is that something you've managed to avoid, too?
Yeah, I managed to avoid that, man. I mean, for a while when I was younger, I was stupid enough to sell them, but that was just a business.
You're kidding.
No.
You get the best dealers are the ones who don't use. That's right.
Yeah, I never got high off my own supply.
I can't believe that's a saying that I know, by the way.
Yeah, that's a saying, bro. And I don't know who came up with it, but I think he had an accent.
Yeah.
Get high off your own supply.
So, Carlos, now you are, I was doing this in the intro, you are a complete industry now with so many things going on. You've got the tours, you've got the TV, you've got the movie. Yep. Tell us about making a DreamWorks movie. Is that, that must have been very cool.
And meeting the guys at DreamWorks is you don't realize what DreamWorks is, You're just doing a movie, and all of a sudden you're like, is that Steven Spielberg having lunch with us? And you're like, oh my God, that's Steven Spielberg. And then I got to work with, the Farrelly Brothers, and I'm like, these guys made all kinds of movies that I love. These are the Farrelly Brothers. And, I had a really good role in this movie. I was so blown away. Because, I mean, to be honest with you, I don't take any of this fame stuff seriously. I don't take any of this really. I get up, I think of funny stuff to do. I either do it on the show or I do it in live stand-up, and I just move on. But that was just, damn, that was like, that's surreal, you know what I mean?
Carlos Mencia, Steven Spielberg, safe to say you play an alien in this movie?
I do, but you know what? No.
His finger starts to glow, and you know he's coming back to life. It's pretty cool.
I'm staying right here.
But I was in a. I play this Mexican guy in Mexico, but he doesn't come to he doesn't come to America, so he doesn't become an alien. But if he did, I guess he would be an illegal alien.
There you go.
Now, Carlos, some of your peers have said some controversial things about you.
Sure.
And I know you can't, you know, I know you can't not know about it, and it must be on one level annoying, on another level it's something you got to respond to. What do you say to? And I'm curious because, you know, we have a guy named Pedro on our staff. Have you ever met Pedro last time you were here?
Yeah.
Yeah. He writes jokes, okay, and he writes about 20 or 30 jokes a day, and he has his own website, and they're actually pretty good, and he does them sort of in the style of Jay Leno. Well, every 4 or 5 days he comes in and he goes, Jay Leno stole my joke, because he has the exact same joke, and he'll play Leno. Do comedy minds think alike and come up with the same stuff? Is that the explanation for these people? They're, you know, maybe a little jealous of your success, or what are the other options?
That's always been the way it is.
Yeah.
Comedy minds, you know, let's for anybody that doesn't understand it, on any given day when something really big happens, just when a big event goes down,
right?
When Eddie Griffin crashes a car over the weekend, watch Kimmel, watch Letterman, watch, you know, Leno, watch Ferguson, and any of those guys, and you will find two or three unbelievably similar premises. Because, you know, there's a formula for funny, and we all know what it is, and we're really good at it. And, you know, that's how that works. But here's the deal. I've been on with you guys before.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting how when I became really popular is when all this stuff came out. This wasn't happening before I, you know, became Carlos the Industry, as you call it.
Right.
So it's kind of like this. It's kind of like in football. Nobody hates the Cardinals. Nobody really talks about them. Everybody hates the Cowboys.
Right.
Everybody.
So on the day that Brittany shaved her head, and I came in the next day, and I thought I had got something really cool, and I said, "Hey, now we know the carpet matches the drapes."
Right.
Probably 5 other people had that joke.
But here's the deal. It's not about the joke. What you're selling is you and your point of view, and it's not about one joke. You know, one segment doesn't make up your whole morning show. It's the entire morning show. It's the entirety of your work. It's everything that you do.
The soul of the people.
That's what it's about.
Yeah.
And for me personally, let me tell you how stupid and naive I am about all this stuff. This is a true story. My brother calls me up, and he's like, angry. I'm going to kill somebody. I'm going to go buy a gun. And I'm like, bro, what happened? They're talking about you on the radio right now. What do you mean? He's like, they're saying very bad things about you on the radio, and you're not even there. And I went, I'm a celebrity. I'm famous, dude. Call mom. Tell her I made it. That's how stupid I am. I take all this stuff with a grain of salt, man, because the truth is that that's just the way it is. I've talked to Santana. You know, Santana called me up when all this stuff went down, Carlos, and he was like, bro, when I made Supernatural, there were people that said bad things. You know what? Shine, my brother. He said, just be funny and shine, and that's what you do. And don't worry about this stuff. And so, honestly, man, I have a TV show right now that I'm really focused on. I got to write material. I got some movies going. And in all this, I have a 3-month-old kid.
All right,
that keeps telling me that I don't pay enough attention, and I want her to put out. So I think that's really my number one priority. Right?
Yeah, and if you can fill 3 television seasons with material, you know, obviously you're in the wrong business. If you're stealing, you should be robbing banks, because that is a ton of stuff.
You'd have a lot of money that way.
Yeah, you're doing good.
Carlos Mencia in Los Angeles. Carlos, always a pleasure. Come when you're in Seattle next time, stop by, say hi.
I would love to.
Bob Rivers with Spike, Joe, Casey in the newsroom, and Mike Jones with the phones. Casey, what's going on?
In news or in life in general?
I'll take life in general for...
You control the board, babe.
You control the board? How is your life in general, okay?
Good. A little stressful this week, but...
Is that because of all the band practice?
You know what? The band practice took a little out of me, but also the condo stuff and just...
Oh, you're getting out of your condo.
I'm trying.
Can we talk about it?
A little bit. I'm still waiting to hear back.
Did you get your money yet?
No.
We won't talk about it yet.
No.
So did you get your money?
They were not very nice about it, I will say that.
They act... Well, I don't want to say it.
Yeah.
I don't want to say it yet. Get your money.
I know.
You are getting your money.
Yeah. You know what, though? It's just been the whole year, this past year, basically, as of May 1st, I'll have moved 3 times in 9 months.
How many movements have you had this year, Joe?
Oh, I'm pretty regular. None. I'm hunkered down.
You're hunkered.
Hunkered.
Yeah. I don't.
He's a super freak.
I don't suspect I'll be moving anytime soon. Although we've had a little controversy in our neighborhood too. We got some road issues to deal with that are making some of the ladies of the and making me a little mad too. But
the road is not right.
Yeah.
You've been working on your road for a long time.
Yeah, they were working on my road, and I had a real manhole problem for a while.
I don't want to hear about that. Okay. You go to a doctor.
Yeah, well.
You don't like Mika?
I thought you were phobic about that kind of stuff.
I'm kind of with Casey. I really don't want to talk about it because it's been resolved, but I thought I was going to have
to. What was wrong with your manhole?
Well, there was.
I'm telling you.
Don't you record this and take
this
it out of context.
So
I'll tell you right now.
Show that Mika record again. Watch this tighten up.
My manhole was loose. It was very loose.
Well, that can happen.
Yeah.
Were you eating too much of that fake that Olestra stuff? Because that'll do it.
No. What happened is every time somebody ran over my manhole, it went ta-dunk. The dunk.
On your street.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Why didn't you say so?
Now we get it.
Wakes you up at night.
And this was a manhole that never existed.
Oh, and
before.
You could hear it inside your house.
Oh, it shook the house. And this was a manhole.
Shook it all night long.
Yeah.
Manhole shook my house. Yeah.
This was a manhole that did not exist. They repaved my street.
Can we please call it something else?
It should be a people hole.
Yes.
Well, peephole for short.
Yeah. They did a great job. They put some new sidewalk in front of my house, a new street. I mean, just a beautiful improvement of our neighborhood.
Loose, sloppy manhole.
There was never even a manhole there. The last thing they did was they came.
Oh, this is a brand new manhole?
Yeah, they came and dug a fresh manhole.
It's an unnatural manhole.
Yeah. And, and immediately when they.
Is it permanent?
Oh, yeah. And immediately when they dug it, you know.
Oh, well, they'll fix that.
And it has been fixed. That's why I'm not going
to. Oh, you don't want to complain. That's why you're not going to bring it up.
Well, that's why.
Wait till Casey gets the money before we bring her thing.
It took a while to fix it, but I got to say.
Who fixed it?
The city of Bellevue, a guy named Mike. Mike, if you work in the street department, you're a heck of a guy because I was losing sleep with this thing going.
Well, how'd they fix it?
He came out and took some big bolts and a big old wrench and just wrenched that thing down. And now.
Down your manhole.
Oh, yeah. A bus can drive over my manhole now.
Oh,
you won't even feel it.
Not even
you could feel
anymore.
It inside your house.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it was enough to where I thought I was going to have to sell my house.
What's in the manhole? Do you know?
The sewer. First thing they ask you is what's in your manhole. They say says what's it say on top of the manhole. So I had to go out there and
juicy.
Says sewer.
One way.
I should have just gone to
okay.
news.
Sorry. Find many musicians as accomplished or versatile as Bruce Hornsby. He's a piano virtuoso, a hit songwriter, multiple Grammy winner, multi-million album
song
seller.
Came and went like the times that we spent hiding out from the rain.
Bruce Hornsby is a man whose music runs so deep that he's worked and recorded on over 100 records for other artists, including Dylan, The Dead, and Willie Nelson. Bruce's most recent collaboration is with bluegrass legend Ricky Skaggs, and since the two had such a good time playing together for a CMT Network Crossroads special, a new CD and summer tour has resulted. Bruce Hornsby, welcome back to the Bob Rivers Show. How are you?
Is this Bob Rivers?
Yes.
Bob, I could barely hear that intro. I'm so glad that the music went away, although I loved hearing that. I couldn't hear.
We were saying great things about you.
Well, you know, I did hear that you said that I was... 3-time Grammy loser, but let it also be known that I'm a 9-time loser.
A three-time winner,
9-time loser.
I'm 3-for-12. You know, I'm only batting .250, fellas. It's rough.
It's the Mendoza line, dude.
Once you have one, at least you know, the first one's the hardest, right?
Well, I guess the first one's the hardest because, you know, you spend your years trying just to get to the point where you can make a record for a major label. Of course, now all that's changed. The music business is in a complete free fall, and major labels are, well, that's, but that's a different story.
It's a whole other story. We will get into some of that.
Coming up, it was the object was to try to get signed by one of the majors and make a record that would have a chance to be heard. And so, yes, so in that sense, the first Grammy is the hardest. Yeah.
Of your 12 nominations, Bruce, which one do you really feel that you didn't win, you should have, and which one of your three are you going, oh, I kind of skated on that one, I really might not have deserved to win?
Well, there's a story behind all of them. The first one that has had, the first one and most well known is the Best New Artist. There's not that story, not much of a story behind that. We had a very successful first record, and you know the musicians liked it, so we won Best New Artist. The second one was Best Bluegrass Record of the Year, and that was a scream because it pissed off all the bluegrass purists when I won, because you know they think Bill Monroe should have won every year, and I don't necessarily disagree with them. At the same time, this record I made with the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band was really, I thought it was really good.
Hey Bruce, what exactly is, I know what country music is. When it comes to bluegrass, it does have this sort of jug band image. What exactly is bluegrass? What makes something bluegrass?
Well, actually, it's funny that you say it has a jug band image, because I would actually say that's not true. Because for me, the major difference between bluegrass music and country music is that bluegrass music is music from that tradition that's very much about virtuosity on your instrument. It's really about playing your instrument well. You know, jug band music was more sort of kind of good timey and old time music, like old time traditional music, sort of predating country music.
Hillbilly.
Bluegrass music to me is about, you know, it's about virtuosity on the instrument. So that's where I intersect with bluegrass music, because I've always been really interested in playing my instrument well, yeah. And that music is really demanding on an instrumental level.
And bluegrass tends to be, one, no big double bass trap kit drums and not much electricity, right? Mostly an acoustic thing.
It's environmentally friendly.
That's absolutely right. So, but it's interesting because people wonder about the piano in bluegrass. As Ricky Skaggs says, Bill Monroe always heard in his head the piano playing in the bluegrass idiom, and Ricky's father-in-law, Buck White, one of the great piano players in the country music world, played with Bill Monroe at one point, and Bill Monroe was really into this, so it was real natural for Ricky, who has sort of been carrying the Bill Monroe torch ever since he decided to sort of shun the mainstream country world and go back to his roots in the bluegrass world. It was really right there for him to play with me.
Did you do you remember the moment you came up with the hook for your probably biggest song, The Way It Is? Do you remember coming up with that hook, and at the time, did you know you had something?
Well, I don't know. I thought there was something special about it and something unique about it. I wrote it in my garage in Van Nuys, California in 1984 or so. And, 84. You never know about if what you have is special. You just know whether it gives you chills or gets you off in a certain way. And so there are lots of ways to move yourself. Lots of times I try to write funny songs. So if I write something that makes me laugh and then I play it for other people and makes them laugh, then that's good too. In this case, I just thought it had a certain feeling about it that I had not heard. That was unique.
Speaking of something getting you off, I know you played a lot of shows with the Dead, hundreds of shows with the Dead.
Well, about 100.
About 100, okay. Not so much the band. I've seen the Dead. Joe's seen them so many times we couldn't begin to count. What's the culture surrounding that kind of show do to you?
Well, it doesn't do anything. It depends on what you mean by the culture.
Just don't eat anything you buy from someone at a stand. That's all.
What's that?
Don't eat anything that they sell
you. Hand you.
Yeah, there's a lot of good food out in that parking lot.
You have to be careful, even backstage. Yeah, there could. You have to be careful what you drink. You never knew what was in it. The crowd was amazing. They were the most forgiving crowd in music. You know, they would wait for the Dead to kind of get it together. Sometimes, it would not be very together on stage, but then the moments that when the Dead came together and it was really gelling,
when it clicked,
were just magical. I mean, the hair would stand up on my arms. It was, I'd get chills. It was so amazing. And the crowd was a part of that, too. They would, surge at certain moments and roar, and you know, just it was an amazing feeling because of the crowd. Now, I never got to really walk the parking lot because that would have been too difficult being part of the band. You know, that would wouldn't work.
And you're a tall guy; you would stand out just about as much as Jerry.
Not as much as Bill Walton.
Yeah, yeah, he's a tall guy too. I saw you on stage a lot with him, Bruce, and also you mentioned Branford Marsalis. I saw him play with the Dead quite a bit, and you don't think of these guys as people that would hang out, you know, you and Branford with the kind of hippie rockers. How does that come about? Did Jerry Garcia just give you a call and invite you, or how did you get into that?
Much. It just comes, every call that I've gotten, all these people you're mentioning who I've worked with, it's all basically comes from one very simple thing. They were moved by my music. They're fans of my music, and they would call me and ask me, in this case, to open two shows for the Dead in Laguna Seca Racetrack in 87 in Monterey.
I was there. That was the Touch of Grey video was made at that racetrack.
Right. That's right. They made that after the shows.
One of the last times I drank tequila was that weekend. I remember.
One of his last ever.
Yeah. So it was just a call we got from the Dead. They were fans of our first record, and they asked us to open for them. So it's real simple. It's always very simple. It's all about just moving somebody with your music, and that's how that happened. Hmm. Any of these collaborations, with the exception of one, Robbie Robertson, I called him because I had this idea for a song that I thought he would like for this record he was making, sort of a New Orleans-based feeling record, and so we had a great run with that. But otherwise, it's just been calls that I've gotten. So that's the Dead situation, too.
You called Ricky Skaggs. Collaborated.
No, he called me.
No, I mean, you called him I'm quoting you. You called him
Okay.
you called him.
What am I calling?
I don't know who called who. You called him a deep musical soul. And that's
a fact.
I wonder if you seem to be talking about that same thing with the Grateful Dead, that, oh, they weren't necessarily technically, you know, coming out for polish in the beginning of the performance, but something happens, something sparks music. Bruce, where do you believe that comes from? Is it a spiritual thing? Is it a universal, the force? What do you think it is?
Well, I'm going to try to relate the two musical entities. You're talking about Ricky Skaggs and then the Grateful Dead. In this case, I'll talk more specifically about Garcia. Garcia was an encyclopedia, a walking encyclopedia of folk music. He knew all the old traditional genres and knew so many old songs. He just knew it cold. And Ricky comes, of course, from that same tradition, very much steeped in old-time music from Roscoe Holcomb and Doc Boggs. We cut two Roscoe Holcomb songs on our Ricky and Bruce record, actually. And, you know, he played with Bill Monroe when he was six, or sat in with him, and he played with Ralph Stanley when he was 15. He was just a child prodigy coming from that same music. I mean, he grew up in it. Now, Garcia didn't grow up in it. He grew up in San Francisco, but he was such a student of the music. So the Grateful Dead's music, or at least Garcia's music and the Garcia Hunter songs, really come from that deep sense of old time, deep well of old time music, and so does Ricky's music.
And that soul can mean influence, sum of all sorts of knowledge.
Excuse me?
And soul can mean like the sum of all sorts of knowledge that you've been influenced by.
Well, in this case, there's a certain soulful feeling in certain old time folk music, and it's hard to define.
It's hard to define, yeah.
Hard to define what that is. It's just a feeling. It's something that, you know, when you hear someone singing and they move you, then to you they have soul.
And on your new CD, you and Ricky Skaggs, you have some of your songs, some of the old time folk songs. Then you have Super Freak by Rick James. How does he weigh into the bluegrass era? Rick James, Super Freak.
Did he call you?
He's one of the great old time musicians. You know, you never heard of the old Roscoe and Rick record?
No.
Oh, man.
You never heard that one?
Is he pulling your leg, or is that real?
It's one of the old Alan Lomax Folkways recordings.
I think it's cool.
Smithsonian Institute Folkways recordings. Yeah.
Hey, Bruce, I read something scandalous about you. It says here that you are part owner of a radio station. Is that true?
And why do you call that scandal?
Because we're in radio.
We know our owners are not
like
great
music.
People.
It's a dying industry.
Okay, radio is a dying industry.
Oh, I don't.
Well, so is the music business.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's just I wouldn't invest in it right now. Is what I guess I'm saying.
You know what? It's a station here in my town, and this guy Tom, this Tom Davis came in, an old AAA album adult alternative radio programmer and station owner, and he had this idea, and we thought it would work in this market. We thought that Williamsburg, Virginia, our little
town,
was
ready. Yeah.
Was, you know, demographically speaking, was gonna be a good fit, and so far it has been. The Tide, as it's called, is doing just fine.
Fantastic. Well,
I have a show on there called Brunch with Bruce where I play music that everyone hates.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, so let's close and ask you a little about the music business right now. We've got American Idol picking monstrous big brand name hits, and we have MySpace, a place where just about anybody can get a song heard and do it organically, word of mouth. And in the meantime, CD sales are dropping like a rock. Where do you think it's all going?
Where do I think it's going? Well, to a place that's regrettable for me. I mean, because I'm someone who's really about trying to create an album with a thematic thread, sort of a concept, both musically and lyrically, that weaves through the record, that holds it together as one piece, and it's becoming like it was in the in the early '60s when before say Sgt. Pepper's and Blonde on Blonde became ushered in the album era. You know, I'm coming from that time. I wasn't a big fan of the era of Fabian and Bobby V and Jan and Dean. Not that I don't like those old records; they're great old songs and records. But
they were singles.
It was a time when singles were what was happening, and that was all that's happening. Well, now, but I guess on an adult level, at that time, as I think about it, adults were still buying Frank Sinatra records then. You know, songs for swinging lovers or whatever those records were called.
Yeah.
So there was a bit of an album market then. I remember my parents having, some comedy records and some Sinatra records and records of the Sound of Music soundtrack back then. So there was an album. So maybe it's very much like that in that same sense. Maybe albums are for the adult audience, and
singles for kids.
And singles are for the kids, and that seems to be what's happening now. You're right, it is in a free fall as far as sales go.
You know who Bob Lefsetz is? He's a blogger, columnist who writes...
Years. He's been a proponent of mine for years.
Okay, he writes about the death of the LP and how it's destroying a lot of artists' ability to be the kind of creative way that they want to be.
Storytelling.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it is. It is difficult. It basically, you have to readjust your sights and your aims. You have to basically... basically what I have to do is just do what I do and not worry about it, because you can't get caught up in that. For years, I never trusted the hit area of the music business anyway. It's always been very fickle, and
I guess we could say that's just the way it is.
Well, wow.
I needed a nice tie-up to wrap it up. Bruce Hornsby in Williamsburg,
Joe
Virginia.
Joe Bryant saying that?
Yes, sir, Bruce.
Joe Jellybean Bryant.
Yeah. He was Kobe's dad.
Kobe's
no
dad.
No relation to me, though.
Ricky Skaggs and Bruce Hornsby, the new CD, and you're performing here.
And you know what? We were my band was banished from the Chateau Saint Michel winery for years for inviting 100 women to dance on stage one time, and so that probably won't happen.
Damn.
We played there last year, though. It's under new management, so now they allow it. We played there last summer,
right.
A great gig where we all once again had about 100 women dancing on stage, and they were okay with it this year. There's actually underneath the stage, if you go there, they let you back behind stage. You go look, and you look at there's a big beam under the stage that they call the Bruce Hornsby beam. They put it there after the year we had those women because they thought the stage was going to collapse if they didn't do it. So we've made our mark there, but now we're back, and it's a new management scenario, and they're okay with dancing on stage. You never know, we might have clogging to Sheepshell Corn by the rattling of his horns.
Bruce Hornsby, be well. We'll put the link on the web. Thanks.
Nice talking to you guys.
She's a very kinky girl, the kind you won't take home to mother. She will never let your spirits down once you get her off the street. She likes the boys in the band.
That's bluegrass.
No way. Yeah.
Yeah, I never thought I'd live to hear Ricky Skaggs sing Super Freak.
When I make my move to the room, it's the right time. She's never hard to please.
This sent to me yesterday by Rance. Is this Rance, the guy who used to be our garage guy? He's a different guy. Okay.
Rance Posey. Been a Backstage Pass guest. Good guy.
Oh, I remember Rance Posey. Rance. Okay. Rance sent this in. It's the story of two houses. Listen carefully. House number one is a 20-room mansion, not including the 8 bathrooms. It's heated by natural gas. It's got a pool house, separate guest house, all heated by gas. In 1 month alone, this mansion consumes more energy than the average American household for an entire year. The average bill for electricity and natural gas runs over $2,400 per month. In natural gas alone, which last time we checked was fossil fuel, this property consumes more than 20 times the national average for American homes. It's not in the northern or midwestern snow belt either. It's in the south. Okay, that's house number one. You have an idea whose house that might be?
I have an idea.
Yeah.
The one we've been reading about in the news.
Travesty, really. To burn that much natural gas to heat a pool.
It's Dr. Phil's house.
It's close to Dr. Phil. It's King of the Hill's house.
Damn it.
House number two. You ready for house number two, Joe?
Sure.
Can you guess who this house is? House number two, designed by an architecture professor at a leading national university, incorporates every green feature current home construction can provide. The house contains only 4,000 square feet.
Only.
4 bedrooms. Not 20 rooms. 4 bedrooms, and is nestled on a high prairie in the American Southwest. A central closet in the house holds geothermal heat pumps, drawing groundwater through pipes sunk 300 feet into the ground. The water, usually 67 degrees Fahrenheit, heats the house in winter and cools it in summer. It uses no fossil fuels, such as oil or natural gas, and it consumes 25% of the electricity required for a conventional heating cooling system, even though it's a 4,000 square foot house. Rainwater from the roof is collected and funneled into a 25,000 gallon underground cistern. Wastewater from showers, sinks, and toilets goes into underground purifying tanks and then returned to the cistern. The collected water then irrigates the land around the house. Flowers and shrubs native to the area blend the property into the surrounding rural landscape. House number one, the 20-room energy-guzzling mansion, just outside of Nashville, Tennessee. It is the abode of renowned environmentalist and filmmaker Al Gore. House number two, the model eco-friendly house, is on a ranch near Crawford, Texas. Also known as the Texas White House, it is the private residence of the President of the United States.
Cindy Sheehan.
George W. Bush. Which president lives his life in an environmentally friendly manner?
Well, you're just cherry-picking facts there.
That's right.
I thought the same thing, Joe.
By the way,
thanks.
First off, whenever I get an email that says, no kidding, this is the truth, I think it's fake.
Yeah.
The email includes a link to Snopes.com for you to verify this. Is it true?
And yes, this is true. The Bush Crawford White House was actually designed by Austin architect David Heyman, who is an associate dean for undergraduate programs at the University of Texas School of Architecture.
Yeah, of course. But these features aren't there for environmental reasons or anything like that.
What are they there for?
The geothermal heat and the ability to collect water is there so our president can survive after he blows everything up.
That's right. You bounce the grid to high hell and you'll need a little geothermal love.
Yeah. I see.
Yeah, I
sure.
mean, you've got to have...
Good spin, Joe.
You've got to have self-sufficient heating and water. That's the two things. It's not because it's environmentally friendly. Geothermal heat, anybody that could use it would. You've got to be in a geothermal region. I mean, you can't just have that. But
What do you mean you've got to be in a geothermal region?
Where there's hot water.
If you drill in below Al Gore's mansion in Tennessee, you're not going to find a geothermal.
It's not hot water. It's 67 degrees. Actually, if you drill down below the frost layer, I believe, and maybe someone knows more about geothermal heat, I believe if you drill down far enough, the earth does warm up. It doesn't get cold. You could actually heat your house to a certain temperature. But all of this is besides the point because you're trying to select certain facts for yourself.
He only gave us two facts. I'm just saying.
One house stinks, and the other one is environmentally
one
friendly.
One house uses geothermal heat and collects water to irrigate with. And that, the reason they do that is because there is hardly any water in Texas, so you use every bit that comes your way. In Tennessee, there's plenty. There would be no reason.
You saying there's no plumbing in Crawford, Texas? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that water is at a premium, so you use the stuff that comes out of the
clouds. I thought fossil fuels were at a premium, but Al Gore guzzles as much as he wants.
Well, for example, you talk about the 20-room house, not counting bathrooms. The other one you refer to as a 4-bedroom house. I wonder how many rooms the Texas White House is. I wonder if you talked about them in like terms. I bet Al Gore's house maybe has 5 bedrooms. Bush's has 4. But when you say 20 and 4, you're highlighting a total. You know what I'm saying? You're not talking about your apples and oranges here.
Well, I'll tell you what, I cannot defend Al Gore on this one. Well, I get accused of being soft, as soft as his underbelly all the time.
Al Gore cannot update the home in Tennessee because of historical landmark regulations.
I just love how
he didn't have to own it either. Mac in Fall City, go ahead.
Yeah, Joe was saying about the geothermal. There are geothermal houses over in Suncadia. There was a greenhouse built, which is over in Clay Ellum.
Clay Ellum, my friend. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You can drill down and get warmer earth anywhere.
There's 4 300-foot wells on this one particular house. So you get down 300 feet, the ground temperature is constant.
It's 67 degrees almost anywhere, right?
Yep.
There you go.
I'm no geothermal expert.
No, but you pretended to be to defend Al Gore. You were ready to throw completely false facts out there.
No.
Because your man was in trouble.
No, I just went. I know.
Phone a friend.
Some entire cities are heated geothermally, but I always thought it was because there was a lot of, geysers and stuff around. A lot of that stinky water.
And by the way, the temperature of the earth is actually about 55 degrees. It's a little bit warmer down in Texas.
It would be warmer here, but you could still keep your house at the temperature of the earth. And by the way, it would be even better here in the summertime, and because you'd cool your house super easy.
But you couldn't heat it. You couldn't heat it in the winter.
I assume it's... Hey, Mac, do you know? I assume it's extremely expensive.
Well, it is expensive because what they use is compressors that compress the gas. When you compress water, you compress gas, it heats up, and then they extract the heat through a regular heat exchanger and a furnace type thing.
And what's it cost to run geothermal dome there?
Oh, I have no idea.
Doesn't say in the story either. Not giving you that bit of information.
I love how quickly Seattle is to defend Al Gore, no matter what
I love this. No, come on, guys. Gore is totally in the wrong here, and it's a boondoggle, don't you think?
I still think geothermal power helps you stay off the grid. If you plan on the
grid, you were Al Gore and supposedly this was your life mission, would you get a 20-room energy-guzzling mansion and just not care as you go out and tell everybody else to turn their thermostats down?
Wasn't it a family mansion?
Yeah, it's not like Al Gore said, I made some money off that film. I'm going to go buy me a big mansion.
What's the biggest power sucker on the market today?
It's a farm that
good luck defending
them.
All right, thank you, Mac. 1-800-252-1025 Morgan in Kirkland. Hello.
Hey, I studied. We actually looked at this in my class, and what was actually true about it was Al Gore does use up a lot of energy in his mansion, but he actually gives back enough to the power grid that he equalizes the amount that he uses. So
he buys energy credits.
Yeah.
But wouldn't that exactly be what Jabba the Hutt did? I mean, Jabba the Hutt basically sat there like a fat pig and enjoyed women brought to him in chains. But he did, good work for the community.
Yeah. Filled all those holes in the desert with people. So
that's right. He filled the potholes. I mean, does that seem fair? Does that seem like a guy asking you to sacrifice?
I don't know. Well, because he just gives back it, but the guy...
When you say gives back, I think you're referring to he buys energy credits. He pays money.
A lot more money.
Extra money to be selfish.
It's not money. It's actually energy. Because I think he has some, solar... He has some stuff on his house that actually, in the long run, it gives back energy in it. So the guy who came out with this statement about Al Gore using all this energy, he didn't mention that he also gives back energy. His house does.
Al generates non-traditional energy to sell back.
But that doesn't, I appreciate that he's tried to cover it up.
How about make
But that doesn't change the fact that he has an energy-guzzling mansion, which is way more than he needs. And he's asking you not to have way more than you need, don't you think?
He's asking you to not leave such a big footprint, so to speak, which means, like, if you're going to use a lot of energy, then at least then give it back.
Okay. Thank you, Morgan. Victor, hello.
Hey, good morning, Bob, Spike, Joe, Casey.
Howdy.
Hey, what it sounds like this house has is one water collection system underneath the house for the collection of the volume of the water, and then for the house temperature, what it does is it works like your air conditioner, the heat pump, and during the summer months, it creates cool air in the house.
You're talking about the eco-friendly President Bush.
Did that hurt your tongue when you did that?
It did, a little.
Oh, that's got to be hard to say, huh?
Yeah, it is. It is, but this is a true fact. Can you believe it?
Boy. Well, I like Joe's spin on it. That really kind of puts it in perspective.
By the way, you're from Tennessee, aren't you?
Me? No.
You sound like Al Gore. Doesn't he sound like Al Gore's cousin? Where are you from?
I'm from Chicago originally.
And, yeah, I think the reason is not so much because it's environmentally responsible. It's because it's self-sufficient. It keeps you from having to worry about getting your power and your water from anywhere. And a lot of
he's only doing it for selfish reasons.
Well, a lot of
he got one of the best eco-friendly houses in the world for selfish reasons.
A lot of ranches are like that.
If this was Gore's house, you'd be bragging about it.
Oh yeah, he'd be bragging about it.
He'd be selling it. Okay, thank you. 1-800-252-1025, Bill.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about Bush's vacation home, his second home.
How's the Kenny Bunkport compound? Is that the one you're wondering about?
The White House, his vacation home.
Yeah.
That's very funny.
Use that dog.
Thank you, Bill. Yes, Eric.
Actually, Al Gore buys renewable energy credits through his power company, which means that he pays a premium on his electric bill every month that goes toward
extra. Right. To walk or waddle around and create as much filth as he wants. Well, isn't that somehow good?
Actually, the way it works is that the extra money he's paying is specifically earmarked to go toward renewable
specifically
energy.
Earmarked to buy away his guilt. I don't buy the pays extra in order to pollute more thing at all.
Well, how does that work, Eric? What's the benefit of that?
Well, the benefit is that the energy company is audited for all of these extra payments. They have to go toward wind power or hydroelectric power, something that doesn't use fossil fuels.
Right. He's essentially, because he's rich and because he can, he's buying his way out of having to be a part of the solution
and
conserving.
No, because he's using all the natural gas, he has to develop other energy sources for the
rest. That's right.
Of
he's using it all up.
Right. We're going to need something, too.
Matthew, go ahead.
Well, hi, guys. I want to know when the... Did Al Gore build his house, or did he buy his house?
It's a family home.
Yeah. And there's certainly, I understand the whole family thing. It's a family house. He's inherited it, and it's probably
got some
sentimental value. I'll tell you what.
Historical value.
Shell and Texaco have sentimental value to me. I've had those cards since I was 16.
Well, you know, to defend Al Gore, it's like he's just now holding on to what he already had. I mean, Bush built a house, and he could be like, totally political about it.
Hey, I'm not claiming Bush is the environmental president. I'm just, except in sort of an ironic way.
Yeah.
But I mean, shouldn't Al Gore dump that house?
Okay, from the top.
800-252-1025.
Al Gore has a 20-room man. We researched this. When I first saw this, I thought it was an internet hoax. He has a 20-room mansion with 8 bathrooms. What do you need 8 bathrooms for? You'd think with 8 bathrooms, if he has to go that much, he'd drop a few pounds, but no.
It's his daughters, dude. It's not him. Come on.
He doesn't have 8 daughters. He has 2 daughters. Seriously, that's like 4 bathrooms per daughter. Anyway, he has 8 bathrooms. It's heated by natural gas. You've heard it all by now. He consumes more than 20 times the national average for an American home. And he justifies it by buying a bunch of energy credits, you know, in other words, feeding the poor, making a donation. And house number 2, designed by an architecture professor at a leading national university, has every green feature that current home construction can provide. Consumes 25% of the electricity required for a conventional home. It's George Bush's house. Yes.
Al Gore has 3 daughters and a son. This throws all your research into question, Bob.
It really
does.
I thought he only had 2.
Does she need?
Do they hide one of them?
Yeah, water.
I've seen him in pictures with two. You're right. I don't know that much about Al Gore. Yes, apparently they have an unfinished basement where that third daughter resides.
Sloth is chained.
Liberals are so defensive. It's really funny.
Who? Oh, those guys.
Liberals?
Yeah,
yeah, and I consider myself more liberal than a lot of people, but it's funny how, God forbid, you say anything bad about them, and then you're just...
Wally, hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Al Gore. He did inherit the house.
Yes, family house.
Yeah, pardon?
So if you inherited an oil company, you should continue raping the planet as long as you could.
No, but I'm saying... But
if he that's by the way, that's your logic.
Yeah, but I mean, if he dumps the house, someone else who's not as environmentally friendly may buy it, and if he keeps
and, yeah.
it...
Well, if George Bush or someone else dumped their oil company, then someone else would rape the planet. So why shouldn't he just rape the planet?
Well, no, I'm not saying he should rape the planet. Right. I'm fairly environmentally...
He should buy the planet some drinks. Make it a consensual relationship.
Yeah. He's at least taking the planet to dinner with yeah. with the evil eye. Yeah.
Well, what are they going to do, though? Burn the house down because it's not environmentally... You know, I mean, it's an old home.
Thank you. Yeah.
Well, first off, Al Gore has unlimited money, so he has money for guilt payments. He could instead put one of those fancy... eco-friendly architects into turning that home into a model home and a museum for his cause, couldn't he?
Suppose.
Yeah, I suppose.
And I suppose that's what he's doing. I mean, he's been...
Oh, right now, as we speak,
well,
they're drawing up the plants.
Working
for the love
hard.
Of God.
God, once Snopes says this is true, I'm in trouble.
What would you guys do if your family left you a mansion and it wasn't environmentally friendly?
Well, that's not a fair question because I'm not Al Gore. I haven't made my life's mission going around telling other people what to do.
Well, either am I. You know, I'm not either. But still, you know, I mean, if somebody left me a mansion...
I'd party on. I'd hire Van Halen every summer for the 4th of July. Thank you very much, Wally. Steve, go ahead. Hey, Steve.
Oh, hello. Good morning. Just two quick points. One previous caller made an assertion that Al Gore had solar panels on this and thus was, quote, giving back, unquote, some energy to the grid. That house does not have solar panels. His handlers, immediately after this story broke, indicated that he was going to put them on immediately so that he could be more friendly, but in fact it doesn't have them. And two, I have to admit that I don't understand exactly what an energy credit is. I don't understand how, you know, giving the power company more money puts another barrel of oil in the ground or puts a couple more cubic feet of gas underground either. But I do know that Al Gore has a commercial or a financial interest in the co-op in which he invests. So essentially when he buys these credits, whatever they are, a portion of that comes back to his own pocket. So I'm not quite sure exactly how environmentally friendly.
Well, from what I'm getting from Eric's definition, what energy credits do is Al Gore's financing the development of alternative fuel sources.
That's correct. But Terry agrees with you. Terry says he owns that carbon credit company. Is that right?
Well, yeah. He pays into a carbon... He buys his carbon credits and pays into a company that he owns.
So the richer you are, the more you can waste.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And
that is kind of the American way.
Al Gore's butt sucks canal water.
I'm sorry?
What did you say?
I said his butt sucks canal water.
Oh, well, you...
They should take him to New Orleans.
Yeah.
He'd be very helpful.
Give her own show.
My husband's favorite saying. No, but seriously, you know, his brain is full of the pollutants that came from the zinc mine that he owned. And was fined because they needed cleanup on it. And this whole idea of buying carbon credits, yes, you are investing in companies that are developing alternative fuels. And that's a good idea. But that can't ease your conscience.
All right, thank you. I appreciate it. Tori, go ahead. Tori?
Oh, hi.
Lori, excuse me, I read it wrong. Go ahead.
I was just wondering, I mean, you made this comment about how Al Gore is buying these guilt credits, you know, and because he's got this big, huge house, and so he's paying back all this money, but isn't Bush doing the same thing by having all these oil wells and having this wonderful greenhouse that probably cost him a mint and a half to have built?
Well, but Bush isn't, I've never heard Bush... like stand up and really, you know, sort of put all his eggs in the ecologically friendly basket, if you will.
Kyoto, oh. We're going to go for Kyoto. We're going to sign
yeah.
home.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's not, he comes from a family of oil people.
Mm-hmm. Well, and
I'm not sure that he owns lots of oil wells, by the way. I think you're watching a little too much Beverly Hillbillies on that one, too.
Bush?
Does he own oil wells? Bush Jr.?
W?
Does he own oil wells?
He's got oil wells.
Yeah, they've got an oil company.
He does, personally?
Yeah.
I don't know if you know that.
That's how they found the water under the house. They were looking for oil.
And they shot up.
What am I going to do with water?
They shot up some bubbling crude.
What the hell am I going to do with this?
But you get the point, Lori. It's interesting.
I get the point, but I'm just trying to say that, you know, everybody's got good and bad about them, and Bush is not a saint any more than Gore is. In fact, Bush is less of a saint.
If I had called this segment Bush was a saint, I would have definitely had a little more trouble with it. Thank you, Lori. Jim in Bellevue, go ahead.
Yeah, hey, I love your show. Just wanted to tell you guys that if you read a little bit deeper into that story, you'll find out that Al actually filed for permits and whatnot to put solar panels and a bunch of other things on his home. But eventually in that area, they can't do that just now. It's against the law.
It's against the law to have solar panels?
Yes, it is.
It's an historic landmark.
In a state where he was... What was he there? Was he like a dog catcher or something?
So anyway,
he was a senator.
They're trying to get that stuff passed, and once they get it passed, then he will actually update that home, so it'll be much more energy.
It's a historic landmark, so they can't do what he wants to do to it without a lot of permission.
Right.
And Bush's 4,000-square-foot house, by the way, has a 6,000-square-foot porch. It ain't no little.
I didn't say it was little. In fact, as soon as I saw the part that said 4,000, I went, that's a monster house by anybody's standards. Still, if you blindly saw those two houses... You would want to believe that the one Bush has is the one that Gore has. Simple as that.
But there was none. Show me the memo where he said, I want an environmentally friendly house. The memo was, make my house a fortress, you know, make it so self-sufficient that, and it should be.
It's, Saruman should have such a house.
It's the White House. It is where our
leader... Make it as strong as Mordor.
Yeah, it's where our leader sits when he's not in the Capitol. I'm not holding that against him, but the reason he's got these things is not for the environment, it's so for self-sufficiency, so it can operate no matter what happens.
It's a model eco-friendly house. Certainly the environment was more than an afterthought. Hello, Terry.
Hi. Yeah, I was just going to comment. I'm kind of with Joe on this in thinking that possibly the reason the president is so self-contained, especially with, like, water, is just nobody can poison his water.
Here, drink this, Cheney.
No. It would be the other way around.
If I drink the water first, then you'll drink it second. Is that first?
Thank you, Terry.
Yeah, you're right.
And finally, Ed, you get the last word.
Hello.
You're on.
Yeah, the National Historical Society will not let anybody touch an old house. They have all kinds of authority and absolutely nobody overseeing what they do.
Well, you know what? If Gore can't overcome that, then he certainly can't be president. He couldn't ride in a swift boat. He probably couldn't even windsurf.
Well... He's actually, from what I understand, tried to do all kinds of things. But
you know what? If I was Gore and I wanted to put up solar panels on my house, forget buying the gilt energy credits. I'd be putting up them solar panels, and I'd call CNN and tell them I'm defying the rules to make that house more energy efficient.
Have you ever been to the South and toured the antebellum homes of the South? If they had solar panels and vinyl windows, and you know, it just wouldn't be. It wouldn't be right.
Historic.
I mean, these are homes that are...
Have you ever toured the refinery up by Anacortes? That didn't have smokestacks and fire coming out of some of them.
Those fish
wouldn't be right. Our whole country was built on
wouldn't
that.
I've smelled that refinery.
Donny Osmond was here yesterday, and he was playing with his BlackBerry. Joe says he may have... We may have gotten bad news during our... What a tremendous interview he was, by the way.
What a tremendous guy. I mean, just a really nice guy.
You like him?
I've always liked Donny Osmond, because when you're raised literally in the public eye from your first moment, you could get a real attitude about yourself, but he's pretty...
He's very down-to-earth.
Down-to-earth kind
of
guy.
Of course, his music is, you know, it's the warm female crowd. Is that station still on the air, Warm?
Oh, yeah.
Fuzzy, Warm, Adult Diaper.
They are still on.
I only know that.
I've never ever heard it.
Well, I only know it because at Christmas time they play Christmas songs. Other than that, they might even turn it off after Christmas. I don't know what they do after
take
that.
It back for the
Does your wife listen to that kind of stuff? You listen to that kind of stuff, right, Casey?
Which kind of stuff?
Warm, fuzzy, relaxed hits of the female mind.
The older I get, the more drawn I am to it.
What's our equivalent?
A male version of Warm?
Yeah, it would be fuzzy old. It would be Good Time, Old Great Oldies.
Yeah, you bet. Yeah.
The male equivalent of Warm.
We want to be reminded that we're kids again, and women want to be reminded that they still care.
It's accurate, actually.
The whole interview I thought was great, except for that Donnie was a little bit taken aback when I said, hey, you could sell that on TV late at night, and he was like,
ugh. I'm going to be in record stores.
And apparently yesterday he was fiddling with his we talked about blackberries and how addictive they are, but also how productive you can be with a blackberry. And he was fiddling with his blackberry, and yesterday he got a message that his reality show got canceled. Unfairly, I think, by the way.
Yeah, after two episodes in several million people watched.
6 million people.
What does it take these days? I mean, it's like, only 6 million people. We're not going to give you another week. Are you kidding me?
6 million people. Get out of here. Well, get out of my office.
Yeah.
Had they made a bunch?
Well, it was the Great American Dream Boat. As he said, it happens live.
So they don't have six episodes in the can?
They don't have anything in the can.
Okay.
See, this is why I don't start watching new shows. They get yanked out from under you.
Yeah. That's why I'm not going to a Mariners game.
They're going to be canceled?
Till I know they're good.
How about these? I mean, he's talking about this firefighter whose life dream is to open a flower shop for his wife. What happens to that firefighter?
It's nothing.
Like, sorry, you know, we were going to build you a flower shop.
For you.
But
your dream was so bad it couldn't even qualify for a reality show.
That's sad.
The Great American Dream Vote. That's too bad. But you know what? Nothing to Donnie. I mean, the most astounding part of the interview with him, if you missed it, was his story that when he was, between the time he was 5 and 16 years old, that he had amassed a fortune of $60 million.
His family.
His family fortune.
To be fair.
Well, but it was all Donnie. It was like, it was not like Tito did anything.
Merrill,
or Jermaine.
Merrill.
Whatever their names were.
Jimmy and Merrill.
Yeah.
Alan.
It was all Donnie.
Yeah.
$60 million. And I was talking to some friends about that last night because they had heard the interview. And they were mulling it over. And they said, do you realize what he said? Because today, $60 million is a lot of money. Then.
Yeah.
$60 million was Jed Clampett money. In fact, this turned into a discussion about what it means to be a millionaire today. And in my youth, if you were a millionaire, you could have 10 houses. And in Seattle today, if you're a millionaire, it means, wow, he's actually paid off his house.
Yeah, it's a condo downtown.
It's close.
Yeah. Or a condo. There are condos well over a million.
Wow.
And so the whole millionaire term has kind of now. Hey, don't get me wrong.
Don't go as far as it used to. Is that where we're going?
It's still unreachable.
Yeah.
For most people, it's still rarefied air the way. But you know what? I think millionaire now means what six figures used to mean. Six figures used to be that rare, unobtainable status symbol. That you'd hit six figures. Now, it's still, again,
you'd be a major league ball player to make a six-figure income back then.
It's still very difficult to make six figures. But if both the husband and wife work, and this is one of the things that I think traps women into working that may not want to. And those of you that want to, it's okay with me. It's not the way God planned it, but it's okay
with
me.
Thank you for your permission. We appreciate
that.
Yeah.
But the whole idea, I think the six figures still mean something?
Yeah, I think it always will.
Six figures.
So it's just that social, you're right, that ball.
Now, a lot of people are not there themselves individually, but when the husband and wife combine... we make six figures. It's a good feeling, isn't it? It's almost a tingle.
And a million still means a lot. I mean, if you can put $1 million in the bank, you're done. I mean, I think
you're done. I don't think so.
I think so. It depends on
How you want to live.
Right. Well,
if you want to move into a into a mobile home park.
No.
And eat from the coupon clipping.
You can do a little better than that.
You
on
think
a million?
So? I don't know, Joe.
If you can get 6% on your money, which is really
which is not at all possible.
Oh, 6% is...
Once you go to very, very conservative investments, you maybe get 4 or 5%, and then the broker is going to take his cut, right?
Well, if you can get 5%, which you can get on a just a regular old savings account right now, 5% on your money...
$50,000 a year.
$50,000 a year.
And you'll stand still as inflation eats that away.
But if you've paid for your house...
That's if you're only going to live for a few years, though. Right. It'll work fine.
Yeah, I mean, I hope to have more, but I think at $1 million in the bank.
Is that your dream now, still, millionaire?
Oh, I'd love to someday say, hey, I'm a millionaire. That little guy, he's a millionaire. I mean, I still remember the song. It's,
Guy?
Yeah, well.
What song was that?
Dire Straits. I mean, even when the 80s, millionaire was huge.
Right.
The little F-bomb's got his own jet airplane, the little F-bomb's a millionaire.
I won't have a jet airplane. I won't even have
point.
That's
I probably won't even have a fishing boat. I mean, it's,
Yeah, exactly. You can't have any luxuries at that point. That would be enough to... And again, you're thinking it's just you, but if you had a whole family, if you have kids, you have college, you have all that stuff. It's,
luxury being digital.
We're on that hamster wheel.
Meat that's not ground up. I mean, I'll have luxuries,
Meat that's not ground up. Dreamer.
Definition of success. Ooh, I got a tingle. But, Donny Osmond made $60 million by the time he was 16 and lost it all by the time he was 20.
Had it stolen.
Well, lost it.
Well, lost it all seems like you've...
Bad investments, stupid decisions, hired the wrong people.
Yeah, that's true. There's some ownership there.
Not entirely. I mean, let me put it to you this way. If you have $60 million and you don't watch it, I don't care who you are, it will be stolen.
Yeah.
Well, but the really sad part of the story is, without drugs and alcohol clouding his mind.
It's sad that he did it without drugs and alcohol.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to...
I can see Ozzy losing everything.
Yeah,
by the time
if you're going to burn through something like that, you better
be loved
doing
that.
It.
We should have mentioned that while he was
here. Oh, I did. I said, that's a shame
that
you didn't get to party that stuff away.
I missed that.
Well, that's not quite as club-like as you did. You lost it all sober. Hmm. How dumb are you?
To lose a huge amount of money and to completely recover from it.
Well, except that it took him 10 years to make it and 30 to recover.
And he's about half. Is what he
did he say
me.
Half?
Yeah. He goes, I've
half.
Recovered maybe half.
Maybe half.
Yeah.
And which means, by the way, that's not even half. Because if he has $30 million now compared to $60 million 30 years ago, he has a tenth of what he had.
Yeah.
And don't cry for Donnie on the loss of his show. He's already back on the horse. He may be on CBS in the fall. He's got the Name That Tune with Donny Osmond. Is already been shot and everything. So he's always one step ahead.
Well, the current TV climate is very good for guys like him. He's easy to work with.
Yep.
Good guy.
Comes to work on time. He's not drunk.
He's not drunk.
As Joe mentioned.
He's not going to party it all away.
Right.
It's all good stuff. Are you there, Mark?
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead.
Hey, Bob. I was just thinking of listening to you talking about being a millionaire and that's not enough money. I'm not even close to being a millionaire. I make about $27 an hour. I've been married twice. I've given away two houses. And I live a comfortable life. I put about $3,000 a month in my bank. I got a fishing boat. I do what I want when I want. And I might as well be a millionaire because I don't need it.
And I totally admire that, Mark. Do you have a wife and kids?
No, I do. I got two kids, but they're growing up. They're 17 and 19. And, and I spend money on my kids all the time.
No wife and a fishing boat. You're
divorce,
doing good.
Too.
No, did you hear good. Joe just with the dreamy thing about
well,
all the sparkle
just,
about no wife?
Over there.
No wife and a, you trade your wife for a fishing boat.
No, I would not. No, I in fact I mentioned to my wife that yesterday. You know, I hope you don't mind spending the rest of your life with me because I think that's the way it's going to go down here. So.
You were having a snuggle moment?
No, that was on a cell phone. We don't ever talk in person. I was on
say stuff like that when you're caressing her.
I know.
Not on a cell phone.
I know.
BlackBerry. Text, text, text.
XOXO.
Hey, Mark?
Yeah.
I totally admire people who are not materialistic. I think it's a fantastic thing.
Well, you know, the funny thing about the fishing boat is, you know, when I was with my wife, she wouldn't go with me. She wouldn't go with me and the kids. She'd just, you know, take the kids, go by yourself. Take the kids, go by yourself. That was time and time again. And I just got to thinking, what was she doing when I was out fishing with the kids?
And
now, we're not married anymore. I gave her the house and everything in it, and I just moved on. And not only that, but then I married another woman and gave her my house I built. And now I bought 6 acres in Morton, and I'm building another house. And this one, I'm building it for myself.
Are you dating?
Hey, hold on, Casey. Maybe you should see this guy for a couple
Morton.
Of years.
Morton.
You could get
just
a house
for a
up.
Little while.
House in Morton.
What kind of boat you got?
I got a 15-foot aluminum with a canvas roof and swivel seats and fish finder and all that good stuff.
You're in good shape.
And you know what, this is
motor right now.
Mark, yeah. Other than the whole wife thing, which seems to be a recurring nightmare, this is a this is a great lesson for everybody, though. That
yeah.
He's happy.
Yep.
A few things bring him happiness, and he doesn't crave everything else. You don't. I know you don't have the new video iPod.
Yeah, I got an iPod Shuffle.
Shuffle. See, he's satisfied with his shuffle.
With fishing
yeah.
songs.
15-foot boat, iPod
oh,
shuffle.
John Denver records.
Simple man.
Betcha.
All right, Mark. Well, that's fine. But, you know, a lot of people are on that hamster wheel, that treadmill, looking for that six-figure income and that, you know, that millionaire status.
Yeah.
And even now, though, it doesn't mean anything. Do you remember when you were a kid?
Yeah.
What did a millionaire mean then?
Still have a kid.
I can tell. What did being a millionaire mean to you?
Well, when I was a kid, a millionaire meant, you know, being comfortable and not having any financial worries.
None.
And
right.
That's pretty much where it's at. But financial worries, that's all in your head.
Exactly.
Don't get in over your head and it's not a problem.
You found out that you're comfortable with no financial worries on a salary of what?
Oh, I make probably $55,000-$60,000 a year.
Which, by the way, when I was growing up, was a super rich guy.
That was it.
Yeah.
The biggest house in the block.
That's what $1 million will get you. If you put $1 million in the bank, you can keep that $60,000 lifestyle.
Well, I tell you, listening to Joe, I could put $1 million in a bank and live on the interest and live comfortably on the interest.
Exactly. I'm with you.
Your little trip to Canada once in a while for those prescription meds, you'd be all set.
You got a good taste for cat food in your mouth? Yeah.
My philosophy was if you didn't have a mortgage payment, you're as good as retired anyway.
Yep.
Nice, Mark.
You get that house paid for and you get some money in the bank.
You going fishing today, Mark?
No, I'm going to work today and I'm going to work tomorrow too.
You only go for bass, huh?
No, I fish for trout mostly. Still head down to Callis.
You've right. been married twice and divorced twice. You don't want any more big mouths in your life. You're done. You are all done.
I've had all the big mouth I can handle.
There you go. Sure.
Now, what went wrong with the wives? Did they cheat on you or something, or did you lose interest in them?
The first one, I don't know. I just think she was really obsessed with having children, and once she had her first child, she became a mother and quit being a wife, and that just tore us down. And the second one, she made $100,000+ a year, and she just decided that she could do whatever she wanted, and her idea was to take me for everything she can get. Only thing is, I never fought her. I just gave her everything she wanted and turned around and walked away.
You got the freedom.
Yep.
You can't put a price on freedom, my man.
Well, that matters, but I'll bet you she's as miserable today as she's ever been.
Amen.
Well, we can only hope.
Well, he's looking at his fish finder. He sees the world he needs to see.
I love this.
And what about the second wife?
That is the second wife.
Oh, what about the first one?
Well, the first one, she lives in Bothell. She got married again, and they're building the Street of Dreams houses, and I don't know. I guess they're fine. I kind of govern her happiness by how much weight she gains.
Oh, yeah. I guess she's fine.
She's doing okay.
Yeah, right on.
Mark,
great mother, and her husband's good to my kids, and that's all that matters to me.
Quite a little baker.
Mark, enjoy your world.
Okay, thanks, Bob.
All right.